welcome to episode 101 of
Brutal Battle.
Yes, that is Nathan Kalasnik. He's been on the show before. He brought beers. If anyone doesn't remember at the moment, he's the one who brought the line of pale ales that we had tried back to back to back. And then he had brought the interesting rogue stout glass that we tried a stout in. So that was a good time. He's back. And since this is 101, we've just crossed into the hundreds. What we're planning on doing is something we haven't done in a long time.
Real long time,
yeah. It's the thing we call beer knife fight, which Nathan and I were talking before we started recording. I feel like it's been like 20, 30, 40, maybe 50 episodes since that happened.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. In all fairness to Nathan, he sent me the beer knife fight challenge like months and months and months ago.
Which is when the last knife fight might have actually been thrown down. Because I think you gave out a call out to anybody willing to challenge anybody to send an email. So I did.
So I kind of screwed up on that because I was like, anyone can challenge me. I got a challenge, and then I waited like forever, which honestly I kind of just forgot for a while. But anyway, we're going to do the beer knife fight, and it'll be this episode and the two episodes after it. So how we're doing it is we're actually going to make the beer knife fight beers the mystery beers for the episode. But we're doing it so Rebecca is tasting the beers. Her sister Erica is actually here at the moment as well. And Erica's pouring the beers so that Rebecca doesn't see them. Rebecca's tasting upstairs, writing down her ratings, and then bringing them down to us. And then we'll taste them, and we'll also rate them. But our numbers will count 25%, and Rebecca's numbers will count 50%. So since she doesn't know any of the beers, she'll have the largest portion of the actual rating. So that's how we're going to work it. And these will actually be like regular mystery beer entrants. So if they do really well, then they're part of the actual King of the Hill tournament. So figured we'd just parlay that in there. But one thing that we always deal with is the hop knowledge. And
oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. I know you're excited to hear that.
I am.
So we're going to cover Palisade hops this time around. Palisade hops, product of the Yakima Chief Ranch in the northwestern United States. It means, the name Palisades means a strong wooden fence, literally, and is a cross between Tettnanger and an American hop variety via open pollination. It's also known as YCR number 4 and marks yet another versatile hop variety from the Yakima farm. I know a lot of people know about Yakima hops. If you're like deep into the industry,
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, well, there's like Victory did a Yakima Twilight, which was a beer with like Yakima Valley hops. So, the Palisade hop borders on the line between being a dual use hop. It's associated with beer styles like IPAs. But more for complex yet subdued flavor profiles and aromas than for use for like bitterness. It's associated with sweet nectar fruits with hints of citrus, which sounds awesome to me. The bouquet will also delivers a punch of floral perfume to the beer, likely something that's fairly aggressive for hops. From beer styles such as Goldens to Lagers to Imperials, Palisade hops are worth some experimental brewing journeys, apparently.
Mm.
So what I get from that is it's an extremely versatile hop, can be used for many things, and awesome. I would love to try some beers that specifically say brewed with Palisades hops.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it was a featured beer, like when they solely use Palisades as opposed to like ones that use maybe a couple different ones in there.
Yeah, a bunch of like, a lot of breweries do like those single hop beers, which is so much fun because then you really can start to get like the profile of different hops, and I like that.
Like when Deschutes did the, was it the Chasing Freshies with the Mosaic hops?
Yeah.
I really like that beer. Those Mosaic hops are really wonderful, but unfortunately they're pretty rare to, I guess, come by.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of beers that use them, or at least that say they use them, but when they're out there, they're tasty. So there's a topic that I felt like we need to address on this episode, and it's some weeks old, but it's still relevant because of, you know, what we can talk about related to it. So we we assume everybody watches the Super Bowl.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, pretty much everyone.
I think this year it set the record for most people watching anything.
Which I thought was not going to be the case because of the whole cheating ordeal.
Deflategate.
I thought people would be like, ah, terrible. But controversy, I guess, gets people more interested. So, speaking of controversy, there was a very infamous Budweiser beer ad that kind of took a shot at the craft beer industry, mainly craft beer drinkers, saying that they're basically snobs and kind of calling them sissies a little bit because they just, like, sniff beer. So it basically was saying that, and it said, you know, we brew beer, kind of no-frills beer. We know it's no-frills, so if you just want, like, a drinking beer, drink Budweiser. If you want... It, you know, if you want to sniff on beers and have your, they even said pumpkin peach ales, you know, you can have craft beer. So a lot of people in the craft beer industry took offense to it because it was kind of like a, it was kind of, to me, it came off as like a bullying commercial saying like, F you, you a-holes to the craft industry. I mean, how did you perceive
when it? When I watched it, and as soon as it ended, I said, oh, shit. I said, I wonder what Carlin's thinking about this. I wonder if he's actually watching it.
Well, it's funny because if anyone actually follows my Twitter account, which is at Brutal Battle, I sent out some tweets targeted at Budweiser. I actually sent some things to them. The only one I can remember, there were two that I can remember I sent. I think I sent like three. And they had said on there that they brew the hard way in their commercial. Yeah. And I basically said, I guarantee that Dogfish Head puts way more work into brewing their beers than you ever will.
Absolutely.
And I guarantee that. Well, interestingly enough, not long after that, Dogfish Head started following me on Twitter. So I guess they agree, you know, which was cool. The other one that I remember putting out was drinking Budweiser's like... using a Commodore 64 computer. You're living in the past. So, I mean, and that was because I was kind of pissed about it, but for me right now, there are a lot of different views I have on it. I don't think I feel extremely strong one way or the other, because I see validity to kind of all these different arguments that I've heard.
Yeah.
But, you know, where are you sitting with it at the moment?
Funny, I'm in a beer group on Facebook that I was in the military with a guy, and he went back to Michigan, and he likes craft beer, and a lot of his friends in that area like craft beer, so he kind of started a Facebook group so we can, like, post things that we're drinking and, you know, talk about it, and they're always posting stuff about all the breweries up there near Detroit and stuff like that, and one of them posted the commercial and was, like, asked, like, everybody's opinion on it, and I pretty much said... To me, it seems like that the way the commercial was is that Budweiser's getting a little scared because craft beer just surpassed them in sales this past year.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, we're scared, so we're going to overreact and spend $9 million on a commercial about how awesome we are.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about it. And interestingly enough, through that, all them people, they were talking about how that pumpkin peach beer is actually brewed by Elysian.
It's a real beer.
Who they just bought out.
Yeah, they had just purchased like 1 or 2 weeks prior to that ad running.
So that's like, I kind of feel bad for Elysian now, like after, you know, they get bought out thinking, hey, this is a good thing. It's going to hopefully help our distribution and stuff like that. And then they pretty much, you know, kick them in the face with, go ahead and dissect your fancy pumpkin peach beer.
Yeah. Well, and a few things had happened, like, there was an interview with one of the owners of Elysian who actually said that this was particularly awful commercial for him because he didn't want to sell Elysian to AB InBev in the first place. He got outvoted. Mm-hmm. So he said, to be in my personal position where I didn't want to get sold anyway, I get sold to this company, and then the company basically, like you said, kicks you in the face. Like a week, 2 weeks later, it's horrible. So it enraged him pretty much. But the flip side of that, which is kind of interesting, someone threw out that because people are feeling sympathy for like Elysian, Goose Island, 10 Barrel, Blue Point, all these craft breweries that AB InBev owns, that might actually increase their sales from people who otherwise would not purchase from them. So therefore getting that money anyway. Yeah. But... real interesting. But yeah, then there was that other thing thrown out, how, you know, Elysian actually made that pumpkin peach ale. Why did they pick pumpkin peach specifically? It may have been on purpose.
Yeah, it could have been on purpose.
So another idea that was kind of thrown out there is, you know, maybe AB InBev did this to intentionally troll craft beer drinkers to see if they got pissed off about it, you know, and kind of like stick a thumb in their eye, which someone else had said, look, you know, craft beer has been slamming macro beers for a long time, very publicly, and kind of like name calling and stuff like that. So isn't it only fair if the macros just do the same?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, and you know, when that argument came up, I was kind of like, yeah, I mean, I can see that. Like, if you can dish it, you should be able to take it at the same time. Like, that does make sense. But on the other hand, me personally, like, I will never drink Anheuser-Busch InBev. And I think the difference in that kind of saying F you from the macro beer drinker perspective and F you from the craft beer perspective, drinker perspective, that is, the difference is the overwhelming majority of craft beer drinkers have consumed macro beers early in their life, at least.
Yeah.
Or some still do for different occasions. The overwhelming majority of people who drink macro beers have not given a proper chance to craft beer. So it's a little more like F you out of ignorance, in my opinion, on the macro side. And it's a little more of F you on the craft side out of, you know, you are kind of fighting against this craft beer movement, which we don't like. So, you know, it's different. But, I don't know, there's just so many different aspects to it. And one of the things I thought about as I was like, what were the risks versus the rewards for Budweiser to run this?
Yeah.
You know, and I thought their thinking could have been, well, craft beer drinkers don't drink our beer anyway. So if we take a swipe at them, it's not going to hurt us.
Yeah.
But then again, they own craft breweries now. Right. But that's assuming, you know, there will be a backlash, only assuming that people
do the research.
Yeah, they do. And most people don't. You only get these few, like this small group of like very savvy craft beer drinkers who know who owns what.
Yeah.
So those are the people who are going to be pissed off about it, which they're probably not going to buy macro beers anyway, so I think Budweiser was kind of like, we can do it, and there probably will not really be any repercussions because people aren't going to know that we own Elysian or Ten Barrel or Blue Point or Goose Island. So I could see it that way. But at the same time, you know, they have to get more involved in craft beer. Like, they have to in order to keep the type of revenue going that they're used to. So why would you take a swipe at the industry that you have to, you know, expand in? In the end, for me, I think they, you know, it's their prerogative. They can do what they want with their money. But in the end, if I'm Anheuser-Busch InBev, I don't think it's worth it. I don't think there's, like, a legitimate payoff. Because the people you're pandering to in that commercial are not people you need to convince to drink your beer. They already drink it. You know?
I feel like they probably could have got the same message across without being so, like, blunt or, like, bashing against the craft beer community. They could have very easily cut all those asides out and still got the point across that they brew, like, a solid beer all the time on their Beechwood. I mean,
With their Beechwood. Which was pointed out to me that what the Beechwood does is it helps fermentation along, makes it go a little bit faster.
So they make more faster.
But also, it makes the beer crisper and more like refreshing in it, in its body and its flavor. So it has a few, you know, actual, it has a real reason for being in there. It's not just for flavor. It's, you know, also to speed up the fermentation. So
yeah, I mean, they could have done it a different way, but they could have been going for, like, with the Super Bowl, with the all this controversy, and maybe drew a few more people to watch it to see if, you know, the Patriots were going to get accused of cheating again and all that. They decided to create some controversy between macro and craft beer communities to maybe pull in some sales.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was reading an article earlier this morning about how this whole Budweiser commercial situation and that they've actually been losing sales to like Miller and Coors and they're buying up macro or not macro, buying up craft breweries to kind of compensate and take up that shelf space in stores. And they're actually buying actual distributors. So that way only, you know, Budweiser products are being put on the shelves, and they're able to kind of cut out the amount of like Coors and Miller and other things like that that get put into store. So people only have the option to buy AB and Bev beverages.
Very interesting. Yeah. Bottom line, you know, the macro beers aren't going to go anywhere. Like, it's never going to disappear. There'll always be a market. But the big question is going to be, how much is their share going to shrink over time? Because it is. And how are they going to choose to adapt to that? I do think long term, this commercial is not going to matter. No. You know, people forget about it. People forget about pretty much everything given, you know, a month or so.
Yeah.
You know, people's memories are actually pretty short because there's always something else to focus on pretty fast. So, for that reason, you know, maybe it wasn't a huge risk that they took in doing the commercial because, you know, maybe they just know people's memories are short, so whatever.
Yeah.
If you get pissed off about it. But, interestingly enough, something else I have to throw in a little tidbit. I did see on Twitter after that happened that Dogfish Head said, "Peach pumpkin ale,
Ooh.
And then Oscar Blues tweeted at them and said, "Hey, want to do a collaboration?"
Oh, really?
So I actually tweeted at the both of them and said,
"Send me a bottle. I have this podcast."
I should have. I just tweeted at them and said, "You can call it the hard way," because you know Anheuser-Busch said they brew it the hard way, so they liked that.
That's good.
I think I got a like from Dogfish Head on that. So at the least, we can look forward to probably getting a lot more pumpkin peach ales.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, that's what the craft industry does.
This next fall, every brewery might be putting out a pumpkin peach ale because.
Just because right?
Beechwood.
Yeah, with some beechwood. Yeah, some breweries might be, like, prominently featuring done with beechwood.
Yes.
You never know. But that's just, there are my thoughts, there are Nathan's thoughts on that whole controversy. So if anyone wants to, you know, give their 2 cents out there, you can send an email. Just send it to brutalbattlepodcast@gmail.com. And, yeah, or you can tweet it at brutalbattle, and we'll check it out. So, we're going to go ahead and get into the mystery beers here. So, this is a three-style beer knife fight.
It is. It's a unique, first of its kind.
Yeah, because before it was, I think it was always one style.
You did, yeah. You've done a stout. You've done an IPAs, you might have done a porter. I don't remember.
I think maybe only. Oh yeah, yeah. I think we did three because. No, I think
or was
we
it
did
a stout
two.
And porter mix?
Yeah, it may have been. Who knows? It's been so long.
But typically, all the other knife fights have been a single style.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. But this is different because there's Nathan chose it, and it's pale ale, IPA, and stout. But the only stipulation is that for IPAs, it couldn't be Imperial or Double IPAs because...
I've just been getting into IPAs.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite at the double yet. And even at that point, even if I wasn't at doubles, my knowledge of doubles wouldn't have been as large to grab from.
Yeah.
And I needed my best chance at winning.
Although I did have to text Nathan when I was trying to choose what I was going to do for the IPA because I was like, okay, you said no Imperials or doubles, but can I do something different like a black IPA? Or like something like with extra flavor added from something like their like blood orange IPAs out there.
Yep.
And he was like, yeah, just no Imperials or doubles. So I was like, okay, so that, you know, widens my selection.
A black IPA would have been a good idea now thinking about it.
I saw some black IPAs like, well, I won't say anything because I want everyone to think it could be anything, you know. All right, so for this first episode, we're planning on doing pale ales. Then the next episode, we're planning on IPAs and then the stouts to finish it out. So Erica poured these, and she said she may have gotten an IPA and a pale ale or some combination for this. So it should be pale ales. She thinks she did do it. They look very different in coloration. So in the case that it's an IPA and a pale ale, whatever, they're going to get rated no matter what. And in the end, we'll kind of break it down and say, you know, this is how the pale ales, you know, stacked up, and this is how the IPAs, so whatever. So, let's get into it. A and B look very,
very different.
Very different. A looks like yellow, like cloudy yellow.
Yeah.
With a tinge of orange to it, but just slightly. B looks very orange, very amber, dark orange, and it's clear. It's like very
filtered. Possibly blood orange.
Well, who knows? I don't
we'll
know.
We'll find out.
You never know. All right, let's go sniff on A, which is the very yellow-looking one, very kind of cloudy. It smells kind of like an IPA to me. It's got a little... I get a lot of citrus.
I do as well.
I get a grapefruity note on that. Man, I get a grapefruit note.
I agree with the grapefruit.
I get grapefruit. I get a little... like candied sugar in there though too, just on the finish of that, a little bit of like bitterness, like the peel of the grapefruit on the nose as well, but it's not a ton of bitterness.
It smells really good.
It does smell exceptional. There is a little bit of a kind of like dirty dish rag aspect on the very end of the nose.
Is it just the glass that you're smelling?
It might be. I don't, you know. I clean my glasses in river water, so no, that's not true. Actually, these were just cleaned overnight.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, this should be fine.
I mean, I think there are enough notes in there that it's going to be pretty tasty. So go ahead, let's go ahead and try it. It tastes like tangerine.
Yeah.
It totally tastes like tangerine to me. So maybe I was, well, it tastes tangerine-y. I could see...
I get like a tangerine grapefruit kind of mix.
Yeah, and there's more of a bitterness in the finish than I thought there would be based on the nose, but it's not killing me.
Yeah, it's bitter, but it's not like a strong bitter. Like, I've had some like pale ales or IPAs that like the bitterness just like hits you, and it's that same strength of bitterness, but it's not like to the magnitude. It's kind of hard to describe. Like it's a good bitterness, but it's not very big.
I get some of that Smarties, like candy Smarties aspect on the flavor that I get with like some decently hopped beers. So I get a little bit of that. For a pale ale, if this is a pale ale, very citrusy, but there are a lot of really citrusy pale ales out there too.
Yeah.
So who knows? I am getting a tad bit of that kind of like off flavor that I was smelling, like the dirty dish rag in the finish.
Just a little bit.
But it's not like crazy.
No.
And another thing, the bitterness is more than I thought it was going to be, but it works in the beer because it marries with kind of like the idea of the citrus fruit. So you're just kind of like citrus fruit, citrus rind bitterness is.
Yeah, it's pretty well rounded. It's not broken apart. It kind of flows. It transitions nicely through the flavors.
It's pretty good. It's, you know, kind of refreshing too.
Yeah.
As I keep taking sips, like there's a little bit of a cleansing aspect, even though the bitterness sticks around. It's refreshing. It's good. I hope that's mine. Well, maybe I don't. You know, I don't know.
And the sad part is now, like, thinking about it, I don't think that one was mine. Like, at first I thought this one was mine, but then I thought about it, and I was like, I don't remember what color my beer actually was that I brought. So.
Well, I think I know which one's mine, but we can talk about that later. All right, so B is the much darker one. It's very orange and see-through. It smells piney.
Yeah.
It smells real piney, malty. Little caramel aspect on there at the end. Wow.
I agree.
There's citrus in there too, but it's more of like a dark citrus, like maybe like a dehydrated orange. You know, so it's more of like a sugary concentration with the citrus notes.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all I get out of there. Plenty of pine though. Doesn't smell bad. Very rich, like dark.
Yeah. The smell matches the color.
A little dankish. Yeah. Okay, this is going to be weird. The first flavor I got was like a blue cheese. Kind of. Which is really weird.
I don't know if I got that.
That's the very first flavor. It dissipates. And I get like the pininess and like that caramelly type malt, but I get blue cheese, which is, I've had in one other beer before, and it was actually on the show. It was like a Public Works beer, and I didn't like it. That's kind of bringing this down a little for me, but...
This one's got a little bit more of a lingering bitterness, probably because it is a little more on the piney side.
Yeah, it's more earthy. Yeah, I agree with that. In comparison between A and B, I think I definitely like A more because it's, I feel like it's a bit more well-rounded and it doesn't have a cheese flavor to it for me. Plus I like the vibrant aspect of that citrus. I don't think B is really terrible, but yeah, the bitterness and that cheese aspect is bringing me down, man. It's really bringing me down. Kind of sucks. Well, I'm hoping that A is mine. But I don't know. Actually, I think I do know, but... Okay, so... I'm going to go ahead and mark us down here. And I have Rebecca's votes already, which I have not... I have not opened, so... Alright, so Nathan. I'm going to do this one at a time. So A and B. Do you feel more prepared for rating one of them versus the other?
Yeah, I think I'm ready.
Okay. You want to go ahead on A?
I'm going to give A a 4.
Okay.
I think it's pretty good. It's very well-rounded. And it's not... The bitterness isn't off-putting, which I like. I like to be able to keep sipping a beer and not have to, like, take a sip and maybe, you know, have a bite of a cracker or something to eat or wait a while and go back to it. I like to just be able to continually sip on a beer. So I'm going to go with a 4.
All right. And B, what do you think?
I'm going to go with a 3. It's still a good beer. I didn't like it as much as A. It just doesn't... The flavors don't flow as nice like throughout. It kind of... It's a little broken up. It's kind of one flavor and then abruptly changes to the bitterness at the end.
I have to go... I'm going a 4 on A as well, actually. So exact same rating as you. I do like it. It's pretty nice. It's not phenomenal, but it's good. It's definitely good. I could see myself going out and getting another one, maybe, in the right mood. B, I'm going to go more harsh than you. I got to give it a 2, and that's mainly because of that blue cheese flavor I'm getting. If that wasn't there, I'd probably give it a 3 because of, like, the piney notes are pretty decent. But that blue cheese knocks it down that extra point for me. I just can't.
See, I didn't get the blue cheese. I don't like blue cheese, so I probably would have gone the same way. I didn't get very much of a blue cheese aspect to it.
Okay, so Rebecca actually went...
Did she go the other way?
No, she went a 6 for A.
Oh, wow.
And she went a 5 for B.
So she liked them a lot.
Yeah, she was definitely down with it. So I'm going to have to go ahead and do a calculation here. So A comes in with an overall of 5 because we're weighting Rebecca's as 50% and ours as, you know, 25%. And B comes in with a 3.75. So obviously for this round, A is the winner pretty clearly with a 5 and B the loser with the 3.75. Rebecca did put a little note for A. She said that it had a stinky nose, which...
she said,
I can see that.
A has a stinky nose?
Yeah, she said, A, stinky nose. So, but that's the one she rated higher, so I guess she was cool with the stinky nose there.
I think I like the smell of A better than B, because
once
again, I'm not as into the piney, like, pale ales and IPAs as much as, like, the citrusy, juicy ones, so.
So I'm going to finish A. I'm not going to finish B. I'm going to be honest, I think B is mine. And I think A is yours, but my gut says that A is an IPA and B is a pale ale.
A, if A is the pale ale that I think it is, that I brought, it tasted totally different.
Yeah.
I don't even know but it does look like it's in a can, so I don't know.
Everything's canned.
We'll see.
All right, so we're going to reveal B first. The loser of this episode with an overall 3.75 is, it's mine. It is Dale's Pale Ale by Oscar Blues out of Brevard. Mm. Oh, out of Brevard, North Carolina. This one came out of their East Coast brewery that they opened up not long ago. We're 6.5% ABV on that beer. So I thought I'd be okay with that beer. I thought I'd do well. I remember really liking Dale's Pale Ale and blue cheese, man. What about the blue cheese? But in all fairness, this is the very first time I've ever had one of their beers from their East Coast brewery as opposed to their West. So
maybe their waters aren't chemically matched.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. Well, let's go ahead and reveal the winner of this episode.
It's a pale ale because it's definitely a can.
Overall of five is... Oh my God, you SOB.
Yeah.
It is Westbrook Brewing Company's One Claw Rye Pale Ale. This is done by Westbrook Brewing out of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. 5.5% alcohol by volume. I'm a fan of this beer. I've always been a fan of this beer. And as far as pale ales go, I think it's, in my opinion, one of the best pale ales out there.
So you definitely stabbed yourself on this one because when I was in South Carolina visiting my family, I found a beer distributor down there. And I was texting Carlin about some of my choices and... he actually told me, no, don't take that one. Take the One Claw from Westbrook. You'll like that one better.
Because you were between the One Claw and their IPA. And I said, go with the One Claw because it's more citrusy and that's up your alley as opposed to their IPA, which is very piney. Yep. And it's a decent IPA, but it's like, you got to be cool with like real piney IPAs. This One Claw is... I had like a six pack of the One Claw some time ago, and every time I drank it, I just like was very into the beer.
Yep.
Especially for a pale ale, man.
I liked it a lot. I actually, on my way back from South Carolina, I stopped in D.C. to hang out with my buddy who's still in the military. He was in D.C. on a mission. So I stopped and hung out with him, and I had just a six-pack of it, and we cracked one open, and it was phenomenal. And we have to save at least two so I can have one later, and I plan on putting one into the knife fight. And... If that wasn't there to stop us, we would have drank all six of them because it was he enjoyed it a lot. He's just getting into craft beer himself. Just from the last few times I've been visiting him, I've brought him some beers, and now like that he's down in Miami, and when he goes home to New Mexico, like he always is looking for craft beers, and he always says that none of them compare to like Trogues or Duclaux. I've actually taken them to Duclaux a couple times. Yeah, and he loves their food and he loves their stuff.
Well, I am and I'm not glad that you didn't drink all those One Claws. I'm not glad because you beat me on this round because of it, but I am glad because I get to try it again because I don't have any more.
Yeah.
So it is nice. Awesome. Well, Nathan wins the first round. Pale Ale's down. Nathan wins by... What, 1.25 points?
That gives me a little bit of a buffer because I'm unsure about my next two. So.
Oh man, well, this was the round that I was least confident about. So
great,
yeah. So hopefully I can really rebound with the IPAs and the stouts. So everybody listening, just know, stay tuned for the next two episodes. Next episode will be IPAs,
yep.
And then after that we'll do stouts. So let's see how the knife fight turns out there. Cool. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you, listeners. And everyone, please don't forget to
keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.